Hello and welcome to the Post-Combat Normal Show. Today we're going to do something a little different. We're going to talk to a combat vet. We are going to talk to Sergeant Wes Gomez. He was with the 173rd Airborne. He did a couple tours. We're just going to leave it alone. We're not going to get too personal. But he was with the 173rd Airborne. He got to go to Afghanistan and play in that fun dirt box. And I give a lot of my personal stuff when we're on here, and I figured it'd be good to have another vet come on and give you that it is universal symptoms, that it is not a problem of just Marines. I wanted some Army guys on here. Hell, I'd really like to get some other people on here too. But Wes, thanks for being here, and how you doing today, man?
I'm doing good. I appreciate you inviting me over here. Just doing good.
Well, we're going to talk about signs and symptoms of PTSD today. We've had a couple shows where we discussed a few of the symptoms, and I decided what we need to do is we need to post out something that talks about the symptoms before even those other classes. So I'm going to kind of – what do they call that in movies? Oh, I'm going to do a prequel. I'm going to do a prequel to the show where we should have put this out in the first place, but whatever. It is what it is. I'm a jarhead. We don't always do things in order or logically. You know, we headbutt it till it dies, and we don't always make sense of things. So what I want to do, I want to go over the symptoms, and I want to tell you how they actually affect you and why they affect you. And then I'm going to ask Wes how they've affected him, and we can talk about it. So just to start it off, I wanted to say there's a number of symptoms that can occur following any exposure to a traumatic event. That traumatic event could be a mortar landing on your base. It can be you actually firing into a crowd. It can be you attacking someone. It can be you being attacked. It can just be seeing what you think is an IED, and it doesn't even turn out to be an IED. It does not have to be actual engagement combat. A lot of guys will say to me, I don't deserve to have PTSD. I don't deserve the honor of it because, you know, I didn't actually kill anybody, or I didn't actually have my friends die. You know, your trauma center doesn't understand that. The trauma center of your brain does not understand that it really wasn't an IED. Your trauma center of your brain thinks that what you saw was dangerous. So understand that you can have these symptoms and have PTSD without having direct engagement in combat. But I just wanted to say that because I hate the excuse that guys give me of, I don't deserve this. I'm not as badass as the guys who were on D-Day. I'm not as cool as the guys who were on Okinawa or Peleliu. And it's just not true. It's just not true. So let's begin. Some of the intrusive symptoms, we'll start with the intrusive, invasive, involuntary, distressing memories of an event, nightmares, dissociative events, in other words, flashbacks where you actually think you are there again. The difference between intrusive and invasive is, I'm upset by something, but I still know I'm here. Whereas a disassociative event like a flashback is where you actually believe you're back there. So you'll be in a supermarket and you actually feel as if you're back in Fallujah, or in his case, back in Afghanistan. Prolonged emotional distress when faced with triggers of the trauma. Triggers of the trauma can be anything from a smell, a sight, a sound, a feeling. Mine are very often the smell of diesel fuel. The smell of anything burning that isn't natural wood. So if I smell like the kind of wood that is painted, you know, that kind of stuff. And then the last one in the intrusive symptoms stage is psychological reaction to the triggers of the event. So again, it's not always physical reaction. Sometimes it's psychological reactions. You're just extra on alert. You're extra this, you're extra that because of, you know, you smell diesel and now for 3 days you're upset and you're in your room. So on that, again, persistent, invasive, and intrusive symptoms. What are your most – how can I put this properly? The symptoms that most affect you, and what do you think they are and how have they acted towards you?
Crowds. Just period. I know a lot of law enforcement go through it too, is every single time I go into an establishment, which I'm either alone or with somebody else, I will pick a spot that I have my back to the wall, period. Every single time. Anybody who's ever gone out with me knows that, hey, Wes has to sit with his back to the wall. And it's not because I'm looking for combat. It's because it eases my mind.
Yeah.
And if I don't, I'm nervous the whole time. I'm constantly tapping my foot. I'm just looking around. I'm not enjoying anything. I'm not looking at, you know, the people around at the table or anything like that. And it's like, I was actually just in a store yesterday. And this lady, she was so close to me that her cart actually bumped my back. And I had to actually turn to the side, and she kind of gave me this weird look, like, you know, what are you doing? But even though she was like an 80-year-old lady, I still felt that, you know, she's a threat. And I'm in a store.
Well, and what I want to add to that is, again, the last two wars, both Vietnam and then I consider Afghanistan and Iraq linked in the same war. Mm-hmm. So both, you know, both Vietnam and then the war on terror, we'll call it. We've been fighting a guerrilla enemy. We've been fighting civilians. So an 80-year-old woman could have a bomb on her chest in our combat zone. I understand that we're in Rockland or Lincoln or, yeah. or wherever, and it's not the case. But again, that's your logical mind perceiving that. And again, logic and for those of you who haven't heard the other shows, logic lives in your frontal lobe and your frontal cortex or whatever it's called. The trauma actually lives in your limbic system. And your limbic system has no logic. It only knows that, for example, if you touched a stove, the stove is hot. It does not understand logic. It only understands reactionary thought. It's the system that tells you to breathe when you're supposed to breathe, that mm-hmm. tells your heart to go. It doesn't have a logical side to it. So even though you would think, hey, I'm in Lincoln and I'm safe, or I'm wherever, you know, you could be anywhere in the country, you could be anywhere in the world, and you know this is not a danger zone, but your limbic system doesn't know that. So for you to see an 80-year-old as a threat is perfectly natural because, again, she could be. She could have something going on.
And so I don't know her.
And people who don't get that, they don't get it because they've never seen a person of that age be dangerous. Well, we have. And mm-hmm. and that's just what it is. So the other thing I was going to say, it's really funny that you mentioned the being in a crowd and having your back to a wall or something, because there's nothing funnier than when me and Wes and a couple of other Marine friends and Army friends go out together and try to sit at a restaurant with 10 PTSD vets. And we're all sitting on one side of the table like, you know, nobody's willing to sit in the aisle. Nobody's willing to get – it's hilarious. Like we all race to get there first. There's guys there 45 minutes early just so they can have the right seat. You know,
and then 10 minutes later, all the food's gone.
Oh yeah, yeah, it's very funny, but all right. Well, again, that's some of the intrusive stuff. Have you ever had any of the nightmares?
Well, it's been since I was in Afghanistan 2007-2008, and it's still to this day. I mean, it's 2015, almost 2016. It doesn't go away. They don't bother me as much anymore, but yet they're still there.
Yeah,
I mean, I deal with it better because I know now just through – basically it's just like training. You just train your mind just like you train your body that, hey, you can snap out of it real quick. It's muscle memory.
Well, and you wake up. You force yeah. yourself to wake up. The problem with that is you never feel rested. You know,
oh, my gosh.
You either A, won't go to sleep till late, or B, you shake yourself out of it and you never get any REM sleep because anytime you're in REM sleep, you're dreaming about somebody getting shot.
And then you're like, okay, what's on TV?
Yeah, exactly. Hey, let's watch random crap at 3 a.m. So what I want to tell the caregivers and the family members who don't understand, one of the things that I've never heard it personally because my wife is very understanding, but I've heard people talking about it. And I've even heard some civilians who I've known talk to me like this, and they say, why can't you snap out of it? It's been X amount of years since you were in combat. And I hear it told to Vietnam vets, and they've been out of combat for 40-plus years. And the problem is you think we've been out of combat for 40 years. You think we've been out of combat for 10 years, however long it's been. But I was in combat last night in my dream. Mm-hmm. I shot a man 6 hours ago when I woke up. Or I saw my best friend shot, whatever the case may be. And so, yeah, it seems like a long time ago. But it wasn't to me. And for the guys who have flashbacks in daylight, it could have been 3 minutes ago. I was on a patrol 3 minutes ago. So you telling me that it was 15 years ago, that's why we don't understand what you're talking about. Because in our minds, it was minutes ago. It was hours ago. It wasn't 20 years ago. It wasn't 10 years ago.
Absolutely.
It yeah. was this morning. This morning I saw a friend of mine shot.
I was in ambush last night.
Yeah, and that's what I mean. It's so... When you say, why can't you forget it because it was a long time ago, until they go get counseling, until they find a way to deal with it, it was this morning that they saw those things. And so how to explain that deeper, I really can't do, but that's the best I can tell you. So if you're one of the people who's experiencing it and you're wondering why you can't shake it off, well, you can't shake it off because it was today. Today you were in combat. And that makes it really hard to explain. But moving on, have you ever actually had a flashback? I've never had an actual where I forgot where I was flashback. I've seen some friends in stores that are now passed away.
Well, I consider that a flashback because it's not there.
It's not there, but I meant a flashback is you're supposedly
maybe I'm wrong,
maybe I'm reading it wrong, but my understanding was where you actually believe you're back in Afghanistan or back in Iraq. And I can't say I've done that. I've seen dead friends walking through a Walmart and then I realize that I'm staring at somebody and they're not at all that person.
Yeah.
But so I consider that a disturbance because I was still knew I was in a Walmart.
Yeah.
I wasn't in Fallujah, or I wasn't in Al-Qaim, I wasn't in, you know, overseas. I was in a Walmart. I just saw the kid. So I don't know. I mean, and we can word it. Well, I think semantics at this point, whether it's a flashback or not, but
I'd more call it daydreaming.
Yeah.
Where you know how you just, you know, sitting there just doing nothing, and all of a sudden you start daydreaming about something, and then it's a happy moment, and somebody's like, hey, Wes, and you're like, oh, sorry, I was daydreaming. Yeah, I've done that before, where I'm just sitting there watching TV, and all of a sudden just, you know, just rabbit out of a hat, I'm in a firefight, and then somebody's like, hey, I've been talking to you for like a minute. I'm like, huh? Oh, sorry. I was, you know, killing Muhammad Jihad over here.
Yeah. It's a really weird thing because, again, it's the same exact problem that we were just talking about where I was killing somebody 10 seconds ago and now you're asking me what I want to order for lunch. And when I tell you I don't care what we eat, that's why. Because I was just in some shit that was a little more important than whether we have McDonald's or Burger King.
I'll take the chili mac and cheese.
Yeah, and so when somebody says to me, well, why are you cranky when you order your food? Well, because I was just shooting people 30 seconds ago. And so my brain, it takes a while to come back from that. And it's one of those things that, again, you have to go to a lot of therapy and you have to learn how to live with it. Mm-hmm. It's something that you can learn to be a little bit better about, but it's never going to fully go away. That's one of the things about PTSD that is really hard to explain to people is that it's never going to fully go away. You just learn to carry it a little bit differently. You learn to accept the fact that you were just in combat and that it's not real, and then you try to catch your breath. And later we're going to do some shows on deep breathing and some other things that can help. And I know they sound hokey, man. Believe me, when they were first told to me, I thought, that is some wizard horse shit. You know, like I do not need to do yoga. I do not need to deep breathe. I thought, there is no way that you're going to get this mean old Sergeant of Marines. And yoga's not all about the weird positions and the squirrely pants.
My name's not
Terry,
and I don't eat yogurt.
Yeah, that's what I mean. It's not granola eating weird stuff. I'm not wearing those little stretchy pants because, believe me, you'd be offended if you saw me in stretchy pants.
Ugh.
But you know, it's about, again, the deep breathing where you can count in your head and you find a way to relax yourself. Now I'll get more into that later, but let's move on to the avoidance symptoms. So avoidance symptoms are some that I think are the worst because they're the most harmful to your relationships with, again, if there's caregivers, wives, husbands, family members listening right now, this is what's going to affect you the worst. And avoidance, and sometimes I'll say attempts to avoid, because you can't always avoid everybody.
Mm-hmm.
But these behaviors attempt to reduce the level of suffering of a person by avoiding triggers and memories of the event. Avoidance itself, or attempts to avoid people, places, activities, conversations, objections, and situations that may lead to disconcerting thoughts, feelings, or memories of the trauma. And the trauma is usually combat for us, but in some strange cases, it might be something else. Efforts made to avoid anything that triggers distressing memories, feelings, or thoughts of the event. Now, when we talk about avoidance, what I want to bring up is avoidance of emotion, avoidance of when you hug your kid and you can't feel it because you know what it looks like to see a kid dead and you cannot open your heart anymore. And we really went into that in depth. We had an avoidance and numbness in our absolute last just this week we did the podcast on that. So we have a full hour on that, and I don't want to tear into it too much. But again, the idea that it's hard to love again, and it's not hard to love. It's hard to love the way you loved before. And I'm going to use the word normal, but what I mean is people without PTSD, people who don't have combat in their blood, people who've never seen the demon in its eyes. And it's hard to love the way that those people want to be loved. It's hard to hug and kiss and feel emotion in that way because what I've learned is love is keeping you alive. So when we sit in a room and, for example, what we were just talking about sitting in a restaurant, we go to a restaurant and you sit in the aisleway and I snatch you up and I say, God, are you stupid? That's the most dangerous place here. Now, it doesn't sound like that's love, but that's me keeping you alive in my mind. Now, I know it's not logical. I get that. And we all do. The funny thing is about this problem, and I hate to call it a disorder because I call it post-combat normal, but when you are post-combat normal, that's love. That's me keeping you alive. That's me guarding my brother, guarding my wife, guarding my people, guarding my herd. I'm a sheepdog guarding my herd. And there's a lot of things like that where a soft emotion hardens into a harder emotion. It's still love. I would give you my kidneys if I love you. I would guard you to the death. I would stand in front of bullets for you. But it's hard to hug again. It's hard to kiss again. It's hard to be that sort of physical and soft emotion that we were before, because softness leads to death and death leads to more pain, and I don't want that to happen. I just sounded like Yoda.
Well, touching on that, it's because I can really relate to that, is because when you put everything into somebody and you actually fully love somebody and then you lose them, you just lost a part of yourself and you just don't want to do that again. You want to put yourself through that again.
It's hard to invest in that when you know that, you know, it's – imagine the stock market in 08 and you had all your money in there and now it's gone.
You love that
money. Do you ever want to do it again?
Nope.
You know, the next time somebody calls and says, hey, I got a great investment for you. Well, that's what this is to us. And it sounds really callous to say it that way, but
– it sounds selfish.
When your friends have – and I've seen people – well, I'm not even going to get into that. I don't want to be sad on the rare, on the air, but – but we've seen things and we've had things done either to us or to our friends that make it really hard to see through and to to love again without some serious retraining. And so to the caregivers, again, to the mothers and fathers and wives out there, to the husbands, whoever it is who's listening, even the kids, if you're a kid of a PTSD vet and you're listening, understand that I guarantee you in the class what happens a lot is Doc Schneider will say, who in here has a hard time hugging their wife, loving their wife, whatever the case may be, or significant other, children, whatever? And then the very next question is, who would take a bullet for them? And we all raise our hands like idiots because we would. Well, that's love. It's just we do it differently. And so have the patience to see the love that we give, even if it's not the love that you want, and believe us that we're trying to come back from this.
You know what I tell people? They're like, dude, why are you so cold all the time? I'm like, I'm not trying to be. Just know this. If I talk to you, I love you.
Yeah.
If I don't talk to you and I ignore you and I just don't want anything to do with you and you never hear from me, it is what it is. But if I'm actually physically engaging with you and I'm giving you my time, that is me. And it's a really selfish way to do it. But that's my way of saying, hey, I love you, because my time's precious, because I've seen
– yeah. Because life is short, man.
Especially where we come from, where our backgrounds, life just will be snatched. You'll be talking to somebody. I've had a situation where I'm literally talking to somebody on the radio, and I go over and out, and I see their truck flip, and there's nothing left. That was the last time I talked to them. And it's just, you know, I gave that man my time. And so I just chalk it up to, you know, I'm not trying to be, you know, a dick or anything, but That's the way I'm built now.
And I don't want you to feel like you're a dick, Wes, because again, the problem with this thing is we often use negative connotation words on ourselves. Mm-hmm. And I you know, I'm not trying to talk like a doctor. I've just been a lot of these stupid things that I go to and I hear that word, so I'm gonna say it that way. But I say it to myself all the time. Oh, you know, I'll look in the mirror at 3 a.m. when I can't sleep and I go, oh, you're weak. And I'll say it to myself and I'll say, oh, you're a bitch, you're this, you're that. And because you can't just shake it off. You can't, man. Believe me. If I could, it would be gone. You know, if I could stab this demon in the fucking neck, it would be gone. Like there's no question. You know what I mean? But at the same time, it's not us. It's like being ashamed of a broken arm. I always like to use that analogy. Mm-hmm. Like no matter how tough you are, you can break your arm. Well, no matter how tough you are, you can have a mental not breakdown. That's such a wrong word. A mental snap because of combat. Because when you see and do horrible things and they're either done to you or done around you, of course you're going to have a reaction to that. If you don't, I would think you're a sociopath. So, all right, moving on. Negative mood symptoms. These symptoms begin with the event and worsen over time. And some of them are the inability to remember parts of the traumatic event, negative beliefs about yourself, others, and the world. Distorted thoughts about the event that lead to the assigning of blame for the event to either yourself or to somebody else. We blame ourselves so often. It's crazy. Constant negative state of mood, inability to feel pleasure, feeling disconnected from others, and inability to feel positive emotions. So my personal story on that is I've had an argument with some of my friends – and not an argument, a dis – I forget this. Let's just put it that way. That's the short version.
Exactly,
I forget
where you're going with this.
So I was in a certain truck when something happened. And I swear to you, if I had to tell the story, I would tell you I was in the third truck and they all tell me I was in the second. And I don't believe that. Like I believe them because there's enough of them that have said it that it has to be true. But my memory of the event is different than their telling of it. And obviously they're right. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a dozen of them. Obviously they're right, but it shook me so bad to my core that I can't remember what effing truck I was in. And there's 100 stories like that I could tell. I could tell stories of, you know, not remembering what village we're in on certain days. and certain days melting together. Where did we do this on in before or after we did that? Did we go on this patrol first or did we do that first? Or, and because it all melts into one big event where war to me was just one big event, both deployments, all four deployments,
like
really.
One long day where you never slept or ate.
Yeah, and you don't remember anything except for there are some really hilarious moments and some really horrifying moments, and they all melt into one big pot of crap.
And you got to have a cigar and play video games
every once in a while. Yeah, and it's just a – it's a weird thing. But go ahead. What are your – let's say inability to remember parts of the event. Do you have any of those?
Oh, absolutely. There's firefights that blend together where, you know, I'm talking to people and I'm telling them, because it's been a while since I can actually talk to them. I mean, I talk to you guys, you know, and I'll stop for a second. I'm like, wait, was that is a rock, or is that a Malakashay? Those are two different parts of Afghanistan. Which cop was that at? And then I'm like, okay, anyways, I'm just going to tell you how I think it was.
Yeah. I'm going to tell you the story the way I remember
this
it.
This is what's in my brain compartment.
Yeah. I swear to you, I wish I would have kept all my after-action reports just so that I could remember what happened. Not even because I want to read them, but because when I'm telling the story, then I could say.
I'm like, proof.
Yeah,
right
see,
here.
Like at this time, I thought it 10 minutes after the firefight, so it must
it
be real.
Them. You're like, okay, this actually happened.
I don't know what happened. And part of the problem with that is you start questioning yourself. Like,
and then you just feel weird. You're like, okay.
Did I really do that, or was that a movie I watched one time? Because there's no way I really did that.
And then you walk away from the conversation going, God, I'm a tool.
Yeah. It's funny because the craziest stories I tell are true, and the most boring stories are the ones that I think I might be wrong about. You know, there's no way that I couldn't have thought up the crazy ones.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly, like, right?
I couldn't have thought those up. But how about the negative beliefs about yourself?
Oh, well, you know, coming from the grunt world, you know, grunt being, you know, fighters, that's how we talk to each other. You know?
I express love to my grunt brothers in the most horrific ways. I've called my friends, and I'm not going to get into racism or anything here, but let's just say that my black friends get the worst words in the world,
oh
and they
gosh.
Say them back to me. But I would give that kid a kidney. And I mean, it's not actually hatred that we're talking. It's pure love. It's the love of brothers. And I'll do it to all of my friends, but I'll call you the ugliest, nastiest thing I can think of. And I'm going to say it in a way that if normal people saw us talking, they would think that me and Wes hate each other.
That's
like when we meet at a restaurant, we have to go in the back room because if people heard us talking, they would think these two dudes are going to shoot each other.
They're going to fight.
And it's like I hug him when I leave. Like it's just – it's a totally different –
are we getting punked?
Yeah. I mean, again, it's a totally different scenario.
It's like my buddy's missing a tooth, right? I mean, I grew up with a kid. He's an ex-Marine. And every single time I see him, I'm like, dude, you're the ugliest POS I've ever seen in my life. He goes, I missed you too, you fat bastard. I'm like, I'm not even that fat. He goes, yeah, you are.
No, but that, I mean, I don't know why that is that way. I think it's the disassociation of trying to pretend in your own mind that if that guy went away, you'd be okay.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's where it comes from. I mean, hey, I'm not a doctor. I don't have any degrees in this stuff. I just try to put it together myself, and that's where I think it comes from is that way if the guy dies, you can think, well, screw that fat F, you know? Like,
But in the same aspect, that's how you basically say, hey, bro. I love you.
Oh, yeah. No, 100%. Almost every one of my Marines.
It's a total contradiction.
If I pick up the phone and it's one of my Marines, I expect to hear a slur.
Yeah,
whether it's racial, whether it's about fat, whether it's about ugliness, whether it's about your hairstyle, whatever you've done that is different than it used to be, you will hear about and it will be wrong. I don't care what it is that you've done. Oh, your toenails are too long. It doesn't matter. Something. There's always something.
It's probably usually the stupidest thing ever that anybody
else
is going to
hear. Yeah, nobody else would ever have told
me. Like, that doesn't even make sense.
Yeah, exactly. But it's love. And so – but negative beliefs about myself, one of the big problems I have is I always think that everything that happened over there was my fault. My wife calls it my God complex. No matter what happened. I mean, no matter if it was so far out of my control that there's no way I should even think about it. And I still think – if I'd have done this, would this have happened? If I'd have talked that kid differently, if I'd have moved left instead of right, if I'd have done 1,000 things, and it's all your fault. It's all your fault in your own head. And that's where a lot of the depression, and we'll talk about depression later, but that's where a lot of the depression comes from is you always think it was your fault. You always think, I'm the reason that everyone I know who died. I'm the reason
even
that
if you
we
weren't there.
Yeah, exactly. Even if I wasn't on that deployment. because when he was a PFC and I knew him, I should have taught him better to clear a house, or I should have taught him better to look for the lollipops in the road that are going to blow you up. Yeah. And by lollipop, I mean IED. It's a certain view that, again, those of you who know, and those of you who don't never will. So I don't know how to explain that better. But it's a certain look in the ground that it looks like a lollipop because the bomb itself is buried. It looks like the round part, and then the wire is buried, and it looks like the stick. So it's a lollipop in the ground. Not the kind you want to find.
It doesn't taste too good either. It tastes like dirt.
Tastes like dirt being thrown in your face. Distorted thoughts about the event, and they lead you to blame yourself. It's the same thing I was just saying. I mean, I don't want to make Wes go too deep into it, but do you have some of those where you think you're at fault?
Absolutely. And like you said, I wasn't even on the deployment. Like, I got hurt. I herniated two discs in my back. I have three chips in my spine that are floating my back, so I couldn't go to the next deployment. So I went to work for the general post. And then the guy who actually took over my position was killed in IED. I didn't even know the guy.
Yeah.
But I cried my freaking eyes out.
But you weren't in the truck, and so it's your fault.
I wasn't even on the deployment. There was another guy.
I'm with you, bro.
We got into it at the bar on post, and you know, we got into a fist fight. It was even. We got it broken up. He went to deployment. He got shot, and he got killed, and I blame myself. I fought the guy. It's like, really?
No, and again, for the caregivers, for the wives and family out there, understand there's no logic to this.
Absolutely none.
And in the daylight, one of the things I tell people a lot is in the daylight, in the light, I can tell you this is not logical. But in the darkness, when the demon comes, I'm going to have this same thought again tonight. And it doesn't matter that we talk about it right now, me and Wes. It doesn't matter that he just admitted to me that it's not logical. Tonight when the darkness comes,
it's going to make sense to us.
It'll make sense again, and you'll still feel at fault. And that's the part that is very hard to get over. And again, you know, a lot of therapy to get through it. And even then, there's still days where the dark falls and you're alone and it's 3 a.m. and you can't sleep and you start thinking about things and you blame yourself. And so again, when you wake up and you're a little bit cranky, that's why. Don't think that it's about you. Don't think it's about the potatoes you cooked last night. Don't think it's about not cleaning the house. It's because last night I'm at fault for two of my friends dying. Or whatever the case is. And everybody's story is different. So don't think that me and him telling this story means it's the identical story, but I guarantee it's something real close.
Absolutely.
Constant negative mood state.
Oh, geez.
I mean, that's it's kind of – I don't want to say it goes without saying, because there's times where I'm happy. There's times where I'm really happy. I hold my kids at night and they say, "I love you, Dad," and the whole world is okay. And then 2 seconds later, somebody knocks on my door and ruins that moment. And I think, I could stab you in the flipping throat right now. And I realize, wow, that's not what that's not how a normal person reacts to these
and
things.
And then I realize, oh, you just brought me pizza and chicken wings.
Exactly. But because you broke up that hug between me and my kid, I think I could end you and I could keep you as a pet. And I go, oh, that's really not normal. Like, I shouldn't think that.
Yeah.
And you can dismiss it really quickly because it comes out of one part of your brain. And when it lands on the logical side, you go, nope, don't want to do that. But for that second, for that heartbeat, you feel that rage come up again, that monster that you used to be when you used to kick doors and kill whores, you know, and I mean, it's a totally different feeling. And most people don't even know that level of rage because they've never actually taken themselves to that place. They've never put themselves. Yeah. But they've never put themselves to a 10. The people who've been in fist fights, I say, have been at a 7. People who've, you know, been in maybe a UFC fight, maybe the best in the world might go to an 8. 99.99% of people on this planet have never seen what it looks like to go to a full 10 and actually try to end another human being with violence of action. And do it in many cases, but either way, be willing to do it and take yourself there and put that throttle down and go, I know what I look like when I'm at a 10.
Yeah,
I know what I feel like.
And then immediately go and try to do it again.
And they're trying to do it to you at the same time. And then you get back to base and you have to let go of that, and it's very hard to do because 10 seconds later they might mortar you again, or they might attack your base, and you have to be ready to be back at that 10, and you have to be ready at all times. So what happens there is – and I'll give you one of my personal examples. I like to say that combat takes you from a 0 to a 10, and most people have all 10 of those numbers inside their body. They get mad. They start out. They're at a 5. They get – curse words come out, and then they're at a 6, and they get a little pushy shovey, and then they go to a 7, and maybe they get in a fist fight. And like I said, if they're actually becoming really violent about it, maybe they go to an 8. Well, the problem with combat is I think all I have left is a 0, which means I love you, a 5, which means I'm halfway there, and a 10.
Mm-hmm.
And all those other numbers have just disappeared. So I'm either completely don't give a crap about you at a 5, I'm at a 10 where I'm going to kill you, or I'm at a 0 where I love you. So you're either my kids, you're random ass people, or you're someone who's a threat to me and I'm going to kill you. And what the therapy has helped me do is it helped me get back a 7 and a 3. It doesn't bring back all the numbers. You know what I'm saying? It doesn't bring back everything. Those it doesn't give me all of what I used to feel. But it gives me the ability to go, hey, I'm really mad right now and I want to kill this guy. But maybe I should just slap him.
Maybe I should just go down a step and yeah, like, reanalyze everything.
Exactly. Maybe I should just calm myself down and leave. And I'm not saying that that's a great way to live. But it's better than only having a 10. It's better than only wanting to stab the dude. It's better than – and I'm not – again, and maybe in 2 more years and 2 more years of this stuff, maybe I'll have a 6. Maybe I'll have a 4. Maybe I'll have a 2. And if they start coming back at some point, instead of just hiding and ignoring this and only living with those 0, 5, and 10, maybe when I'm 80, I can have a normal relationship with my grandkids or – you know what I'm saying? It's not an age. It's not a time. It's about healing and growth. And when you get to that point, hopefully I can get there one day. So that's why I want you guys to go to therapy. That's why I want you guys to go to these vet centers. The vet center is not the VA. I needed to say that at the beginning, but the vet center is not the VA. They are not the same. They do not give you pills. They want to help you. They're very very often the peer counselor is either a Vietnam or a Korean vet. In some strange cases, they're us young guys from our war. But it's a guy who understands combat. And it's a guy who can talk to you in your own language because all of us are sick of going in and just being thrown pills at your face.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly what happened.
You have a problem? Here, throw a pill. Just open your mouth. I'll throw some in and see how many stick. Yeah. You know, like it's not even – well, that doesn't help. I don't want to be numbed up like a complacent cow. You know what I mean? Like I'm just not – I want to be fixed. I want to be helped.
Speaking time? Let me take this.
Yeah. I've made a joke on multiple occasions that I only know what day it is by what pill box is open.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, it's a joke, but it's also true. So moving on, I'm going to ramble for a while, so I'll just stop myself. But long story short, they're not the same. You should definitely go in and call your local vet center. If you need it, call us. You can find us on Facebook. You can find us on Twitter at Post Combat Normal and message me. I'll get you help locally, wherever you're at, man, in the world. Don't think that again, if you're overseas and you're hearing this, get a hold of us. I'll find you something over there, man. There's vet centers everywhere, and if there isn't, we'll find you somebody who can talk to you either online, on Skype, somewhere, man. There's people who care. So moving on. Inability to feel pleasure. That one is pretty common.
Jesus.
So hit it up, brother.
Emotions. Like you're talking about like not with just family. You're talking about
– No, just go to the circus and it used to be fun and now it's like –
Oh, okay.
Ho-hum. You know, I mean
– I don't
– Go to a movie. Go anywhere. And it's just – I don't care what
you do. See, movies are weird for me. Like that's actually my escape is because I can actually put myself inside that place for a second. Because that was our escape when we were downrange is we would go to the bazaar and just buy as many movies as we could.
The dollar Haji movies.
Oh, my gosh. We bought the Seinfeld box set
and
watched it twice.
I gotta tell this. Oh so gosh. I got ER. It's like 10 seasons. But because it was a Haji movie, it's like one disc, two discs, whatever it was. And it's all the seasons. But it was in Chinese.
Yep.
The actual language on the speaking was English. But to find which episode you were on, it was in Chinese kanji. So you had to remember where you were or you might go back 50 episodes, you know, like and have no idea where you – like you'd lose all track of where you were or what was happening. So you had to – Yeah, you had to.
And they would eat your DVD players up.
That was hilarious. Okay, man. But to get back on track, I mean, we could talk about the DVDs and shit that we bought over there all day because, again, we went through thousands of them. We watched every movie from The Notebook to whatever.
Really?
And, oh, no. It was brand new, and you're like, it's the only movie that's new at the whole place. You're like, I guess we'll watch it. And there's a bunch of jarheads sitting in a room, or in your case, a bunch of army guys sitting in a room watching The Notebook. And you're like, okay, time for a patrol. But let's get back to it. You were talking about how movies are your escape, but how it's hard to enjoy other things.
Yeah, it's hard to enjoy stuff. Like, I mean, like I just took my kids to that Winter Wonderland at Cal Expo. And I wanted to have a good time, but there's so many people around that I was just so on edge. But they're having a good time. They're like, Daddy, Daddy, look at this, look at this. And the pure joy and love in their eyes, they're like, you know, I'm just – it looked like they're having such a good time. They had so much love in their eyes, but I couldn't enjoy it. I could understand it. And their look was like, you know, I'm with my dad and I'm having so much fun. And I'm trying to put on this, you know, I call it my, you know, my clown face is, hey, I look like I'm happy, but I'm depressed because I'm dressed like a freaking clown.
Yeah. And we do Disneyland. My family does Disneyland.
Oh, good God.
And
happiest place on earth.
Oh, bro. What you just said about the clown face, I've never worded it that way, but I smile the whole time. And everybody thinks I'm having fun. My wife knows that I'm not. She's the only one who knows my insides because she sees when everybody else looks away, she keeps looking when I, like, let it go for a second.
You're like, oh, my God.
Buy one more effing hot dog, I dare you. You know what I mean? Let one more person bump me. And bump me again. It's like that that scene, you know. Say what again?
Yeah.
I'm telling
come
you.
At
how,
me, bro.
I'm telling you. And I don't want to be that person. That's the worst part is while it's happening, in your own head, you go, I don't want to be this person.
I want to have fun.
I can see my four-year-old riding that ride with all the joy that could possibly be emitted from a human body.
And you have that fake
smile. Well, and I'm sitting here waiting for somebody to start shooting so I can take them out.
Mm-hmm.
And that's ludicrous. It's ludicrous.
And then you see a bag of trash on the ground. You're like, freaking IED right there.
Yeah. And
then you, like, move your kids out of the way. They're like, we're walking. 10,000
people.
Doing, bro?
10,000 people are there. Not one of them is thinking what I'm thinking.
Well, maybe.
Well, other vets.
Yeah,
but
other
you know
vets,
saying,
yeah, but normal people,
what's really funny is how we can identify each other in public.
Yeah.
Because we're the only ones scanning a room. We're the only ones. I'm in the tiki room watching the birds sing, and I'm checking people. And I look, and I'll notice another guy doing it, and you almost, like, nod at him.
Yeah,
like, hey, where'd you serve at, brother?
Yeah.
And you get asked that question, and you just laugh, like, I must have been portraying myself as a killer again, and I don't even mean to. It just is what it is, you know? You search for things that aren't there, and it takes all your time and your effort, so you don't have time to have fun.
Exactly.
I mean,
and it's – God, it breaks my heart because I have pictures from that day, too. And my kids are – their faces are lit up. She's wearing, like, this ridiculous beanie with, like, this kitty or whatever the heck on it. And I look at myself, and I'm like – everybody else is like, oh, my God, you guys look like you're really happy. And I'm looking at my smile like I'm hating life.
Yeah, that's my fake smile.
Mm-hmm.
You just don't know. You just don't know me well enough. And that's how my wife knows, is because she's seen what I really look like happy.
Mm-hmm.
And what I look like when I'm
when you're around other vets
when I'm
you're comfortable.
Yeah, exactly, when we come here and the dozen of us that are in our little group come here and she sees what I look like when I'm actually relaxed, because there's very few places in the world that don't see my fake smile. There's very few places that see my actual genuine. I'm actually happy right now. I'm actually around people that make sense to me, and it's because I can meet a combat vet from any war. Any war. I don't care if it's World War II.
Real smile comes
out. And we're brothers. Immediately we're brothers. And I know that and I can feel that and that love is there because he knows what it's like to either lose a guy or end a guy either way. And he knows I know it because there's just a look in your eye and there's a way of moving and there's a way of doing things that's just different. And again, it's unexplainable. It's like explaining what apple pie tastes like. I cannot tell you. If you're a caregiver, you'll never understand it. You can never – it's the same as trying to explain the love of your first child that you see.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you if you're a mother and you birth your child and that love that you feel, that's how hard it would be to explain combat love to somebody who's never felt it. You just don't understand until you're there. So getting off that subject, but –
thank you.
Yeah, exactly.
Feelers, damn it.
Well, and exactly, it does. It hits you right in the feelers because
– you feel like just – you feel bad.
A lot of the people that we lose right now to self-inflicted wounds are losing it because of that, because they cannot love the way they want to love, because their family doesn't think they love them anymore, and they don't know how to explain what I'm trying to explain right now, and that's why I'm trying to do
they
it.
They feel like they're cheating them too.
Yeah, and they feel like the world would be better off without me because I'm just a drain on you. I'm just a pain in your ass. I'm just the guy who's too weak to fix himself. And what you need to do as a caregiver, or if you're the vet and you're listening, you have to fix yourself for their sake. You have to go to these vet centers. You have to get some kind of therapist who you trust. And I say that because don't go to a therapist and immediately open up. Test them out. See if you like them. You don't just buy the first car you see. Well, why would you trust your brain and your naked emotions until you know a guy?
Mm-hmm.
Until you know the lady, until you know the gentleman, excuse me. And don't – if you have a bad experience, don't think that that's the only therapist in the world. Because I hear a lot of guys say, well, I tried to go to the shrink and it didn't work out. Well,
I told you that too.
But I hear that from half of my vet friends. And you go, no, well, that's wrong. Like saying I drove one car and I didn't like how it felt. Well,
so I'm never driving a car.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm never going to drive again. Well, that's how much sense it makes. Well, there's thousands of those fuckers out there. And I keep cussing and I don't mean to. Again, for the mothers out there, I'm sorry. But this is how we talk when we're around each other. Just deal with it. But I mean, honestly, like, you know, it's that ridiculous. It's the same way I feel about if you said I broke my arm, but I'm too tough to have a broken arm, so I'm not going to the doctor. Well, it's the same way I feel about not seeing a shrink. Well, I thought it was hokey too. I really did. And my wife was going to leave me, so I ended up going. But because I was that mean and that evil without it, and even with it, I'm still a little bit crotchety.
Yeah, you did what you know? I didn't do.
But I'm just saying it. You know how many of these Vietnam vets I meet who have five ex-wives
mm-hmm.
and their kids hate them and that's what I didn't want, bro.
Why do you think I'm not, have an ex-wife?
That's what, but I mean, I'm not afraid of losing my wife. I mean, I am. Don't take that way. I love my wife to death, but I'm more afraid of losing my kids. When I see them, of the two things to lose, my children are half me. They're mine. They're little clones of me.
Let me tell you, it sucks and to have them around all the time.
But to have them hate you, to have them actually say out loud that. That's why I'm in therapy. That's why I'm willing to go. That's why I take my pills on time. That's why I have an alarm on my phone that says, take your pills, you stupid effer. And that's actually no shit what it says because I don't want to ever forget. And there's a certain noise that it makes because that noise, I'm like Pavlov's dog right now. You ring my bell, I go take my pill.
Food?
Yeah, like honestly, swear to God. Like I don't – because I'm too stupid to do it on my own. I say stupid. I'm being self-loathing
again.
There
we go again.
But the concept is I really have. I've shaken daddy syndrome as we call it. You know, my brain has been blown up or whatever. And so – I forget things. Well, I can't forget if my iPhone tells me, hey, dude, it's time to go take your pill. But we've gotten off subject again because we do that a lot. But inability to feel positive emotions, we went over that. Feeling disconnected from others, that comes from faking it all the time. That mm-hmm. comes from what you just said, your clown face. It comes from the fact that you never feel like – even though you're surrounded by 1,000 people when you're making that clown face, you feel like you're alone because I'm the only one who knows that I'm faking it right now.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody else has a clue.
You can't make a solid, true connection with anybody.
Yeah, you can never make a true connection when you're faking it. Because somebody will say, hey, man, this is really fun. And you're like, wow, you're a
yeah,
sheep.
It is. And then you turn away. You're like, this sucks.
This idiot doesn't even know that there's 5 potential threats walking 8 feet away from him. And that's all you're counting half the time. You're watching people's hands for weapons and you're watching their bodies for bulges. And, you know, and people don't even realize it. And again, logically, you know that it's wrong. Logically, mm-hmm. you know that nobody has a machine gun at the Kings game.
My like, buddies check me all the time. They're like, dude, why are you walking like you're about to punch somebody in the mouth? I'm like, sorry.
Because I'm prepped. I'm not about to hit anybody. I'm just locked and loaded in case I have to.
It's like carrying a concealed weapon in case something pops off. You have it.
I'm not – in 1,000 years I would never draw out any weapon and hurt anybody on purpose. I would never hurt anybody.
Negative.
The only way that anybody ever gets hurt around me is if they start it.
Mm-hmm.
And I just want to be able to end it before my kids get hurt, before my wife gets hurt,
for my crowd to be safe.
Yeah. So, but all right, moving on. Alterations in arousal. And what I mean by that is irritability that doesn't make sense, angry outbursts without provocation, recklessness. In other words, I have a lot of friends who bought motorcycles right afterwards and would take them 130 miles an hour because if combat can't kill me, nothing can.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that kind of self-destructive behavior, same concept. You know, I'm going to go skydiving and see how close to the earth I can open the chute. I'm going to go just all that sort of stuff.
I'm just going to drive fast all the time.
Yeah. I'm going to do 110 in the highway just because I can, because nobody can stop me, because I'm Superman.
Because I've done it before and lived.
Self-harm, where they actually take it to the next step and they actually physically injure themselves to feel pain. And a lot of times they tell me they feel the pain just so they can feel something. Because they're so numb to emotion, they just want to feel something, so they'll hurt themselves. And that sounds, again, it sounds off to people who don't understand it, but when you haven't felt anything in a long time, anything is better than nothing. Anything is better than nothing. And that's where they're at. So difficulty concentrating, we all have that. It's when you're looking for people's hands and guns and bombs, my brain is full of crap doing those things. So when you ask me what you want for lunch or do you like what I'm wearing and I'm actually paying attention to whether or not there's a gun behind us, it's hard for me to pay attention to whether or not the blue dress or the red dress looks better. because I don't give a shit is the truth. And I don't mean it that way. I love my wife. I hope she looks pretty. I want her to look pretty. I want to help her with that. But I don't care nearly as much as I don't want her to die. So I'm making sure the people behind her aren't a threat to her. Then secondarily, I will come back and I will discuss the color of your dress with you after I search all these people with my eyes.
After I basically clear the area. It's like going into a house and Sony's like, hey, we're about to have lunch after we clear this house. What do you want? You're like, wait one.
Yeah, let me get through my safety sketch and then I'll
you clear that house, you take out all the bad guys and you're like, well, you know what, I'd really, really like some chili mac and cheese.
Well, and the second one that goes with that is hypervigilance, which is the always being on a 10 thing that we talked about earlier, and always being on a 10 when it comes to, again, any room you enter, anything, anywhere you go, you're always looking for a threat and you always believe it's right there. Doc Schneider always gives the example of if you come and sit next to me on a plane and I was just in a plane wreck on my last flight and you weren't, and I'm scared, and you say, well, don't worry, only one out of every 5 million domestic flights crash. And I say, yeah, but mine did. You know, I know that the demon is real. You don't know it yet. You just use statistics. So people always say, oh, there's no reason to be afraid here in at the mall. And you go, there's 10,000 reasons to be afraid.
To me.
Yeah, I know. Again. I know exactly that it could happen because I've seen it.
It's like somebody going, "Oh, you're not going to get hit by lightning." Yeah, well, I just did last week.
Yeah, exactly. And you go, "Well, why don't you stand in the rain anymore? The odds of it happening again are pretty low." And you go, "Yeah, but I don't go outside anymore.
I just don't want it to happen again
because it sucked a lot, and I don't want it to happen again, especially not with the people I care about the most next to me."
Exactly.
That makes me. If I was with my combat Marines, I would probably never be afraid because they can take care of themselves. Mm. When I'm with my babies, I have to defend three of us. When I'm with my wife and children, I have to defend four of us. When I have my older kids with me, I have to defend six of us. Holy shit, man. I got a squad and nobody else but me knows how to firefight. No wonder I'm stressed. You know, and they don't get that. They don't understand that they're not helping by being there. They're making it worse. And don't get me wrong. I want them around me. I want them around me all the time. I want to take them everywhere and have fun with them. But that's why I'm extra stressed when there's more of them, because now it's more people I have to guard, more angles I got to cover, more places that danger could come from. Because had the girls go in one bathroom and the boys go in the other, which one do I guard? How do I watch both doors when they're 40 feet apart? What do I do?
Just don't let anybody go in.
But yeah, and you damn near, you know, stop a whole cul-de-sac from moving because your kid's missing for 30 seconds.
It's so selfish, but you know what? That's just how we roll. I mean, that's our way of ensuring that nobody that we love going to get hurt.
So the next one is exaggerated startle response, and that's pretty obvious. 4th of July is the best example of that.
It's every day. My friends scare me all the time at work.
No, but I'm saying there's some that are even worse than others. Oh, like if you hear certain rockets go off, they sound just like the rockets that used to come in. There's certain noises that are even worse. I mean, every day it's something. Every day my startle response is exaggerated, but there's certain days of the year that are just worse. And there's no way around that, dude.
No.
But like you said, somebody knocks on the door. There's a sign I used to see that says, combat vet lives here. Please text if you're someone I care about, and please go away if you're not. Because if you just knock on my door and I don't know you're coming, I'm going to answer with a firearm in my hand.
Yep, I do.
Every single time. And almost every combat vet I know will do the exact same thing. And it's not that I think you're dangerous. Hell, you're probably the UPS guy. And you'll never know that there's a gun on the other side of the door because it's out of your view. It's not like I open it with it cocked and aimed at the guy's head.
Exactly.
Half the time it's in my holster. It's not even shown. But I'm ready in case it is a bad guy. And has it ever happened? No. And logically, I know that. Logically, I know that. But I'll be damned if my sleeping kid is going to be your next target if you are a bad guy. And so when you knock on my door, when you blow up, you know, fireworks in the middle of the night on a random Tuesday, when your dog just barks for an hour unannounced and I have to get up and search because, well, the dog must know something's out there. I better go make sure it's not in my house.
My 45.
Yeah. And you know, when you're driving down the highway and you hear a backfire and you damn near pull the car over and search them because they must have just fired a weapon. I need to pull them out. Mm-hmm. And I need to take them into custody. And then you realize I have no authority to do that in this continent.
I do not have flex cuffs.
Yeah. Apparently, I'm not allowed to take people into custody here, and the California Highway Patrol does not find it funny. Like, they do not find it amusing at all. One? Yeah, exactly. You're like, I'm really sorry about duct taping you and putting a sandbag on your face.
You want to go get a sandwich or something?
And they kind of ask you, where did you even get the sandbag? Oh, I just have them. I have flex cuffs in the sandbag because you just never know. The next one in that same thing in the alterations and arousal is sleep problems. When you first get home, from overseas, it's bad, and you just think, oh, well, it's just because I was just there. And then 10 years later, it's still happening, and you think, is it ever going to go away? Like, do I ever get to sleep again? Do I ever get to have real, like, restful sleep? And the VA will throw pills at you, and then your option of that is then you feel like a zombie.
And then just destroys your stomach.
Yeah, exactly. And you
purely destroys your stomach.
So, you know, you have really limited options on that. And again, that's where we're going to get into the deep breathing and stuff later, because there are some things that really help. And from a guy who used to sleep 2 hours a night and now can sleep six doesn't sound like a lot to some of you civilians out there. Six is a lifetime to most of us.
Mm-hmm.
Six is a lifetime. That's three nights worth of sleep. Like, that's.
Yeah, if I don't take some sleeping medication, which I don't like doing, especially when I'm like,
because it makes you sick.
Yeah, if I have my kids,
you can't.
I wake up every 30 minutes.
Yeah.
And I'm tired all the time, but you know what? At least my stomach doesn't hurt.
And I've searched the house 25 times.
Yeah, and at least I can wake up when they're, you know, crying or something like that.
That's one of the problems, is you have to do these trade offs. You have to do these trade offs where you say, can I be comfortable and get the sleep I need, or should I stay awake and make sure that they're safe? And it's a trade off that you have to make, because, and you're always, every vet I know is going to go with whoever else is involved, their comfort, their happiness, their safety, their whatever, than their own. Almost exclusively. I've never met a vet who isn't that way. And so you end up making a martyr of yourself as usual, and you end up not sleeping, and then people say, why are you cranky? And now it's the thing of, A, I was in combat last night in the 30 minutes I did sleep. B, I haven't slept in 3 days except 30 minutes here and there. C, I see three threats in this room that you're unaware of and you keep walking in front of, so even if I do have to draw out, I'm going to hit you on the way to them. And you're too stupid to know, and you're asking me again, what do you want for lunch? And I want to hit you in the face.
Because I don't want to eat, because my stomach hurts.
Exactly, because my stomach hurts, because I haven't slept, and I was in combat last night, and I saw my friend shot. And then why aren't you hungry?
It's a revolving door.
No, and a lot of these symptoms, if you haven't noticed yet, they fall on top of each other.
Exactly,
So a lot of times when you ask a vet, especially when they very first come into the vet center, you say, hey, man, what are your symptoms? And they'll say one thing. They're like, sleep problems. And then they'll leave it at that. And you're like, really? Is it sleep problems because you had nightmares? Oh, yeah, the nightmares too. Oh, is it nightmares because you did this? Oh, yeah, that too. And like by the end of it, you have every symptom on here, but you only said, I have sleep problems, because we're all embarrassed. There's this macho bravado that we don't want to tell you what's wrong. One of the beautiful things about this radio show or this podcast is I can get guys in here to talk because they're just talking to me and they know that I understand. It's so much easier than telling you guys to your face what we feel, because it's hard. It's hard to admit that I'm not Superman anymore. It's really hard. You know, when you're a combat sergeant and you've taken people around the world and done these things, you think you're Superman. And then you get home and you're like, I guess I'm just normal. I guess I'm just a normal person.
I wasn't ready.
All right, let's get on. There's some other symptoms. Depersonalization, feeling detached from your body as though you're looking down from above, and derealization, feeling as if you're walking on water in a dream or alternate reality. So in other words, just not feeling connected to yourself is the right word for that.
Mm-hmm.
Where sometimes you're watching yourself from far, far away, like, this isn't even my life. This isn't even who I am. I'm the mean sergeant who kicks doors and kills whores. I am not the guy who takes his kid to soccer practice. I am not the minivan driving weirdo that I see sometimes in the mirror, and I don't really have a minivan. That's a joke. But I mean, you know, the concept of I'm not this normal person who walks around in this normal society and drinks coffee with these people. And
I'm not the 9-to-5er that
– Yeah, and but that's what people see. So, of course, you kind of say to yourself, this isn't me. I'm just faking it. Like you said earlier, I'm wearing a clown mask. I'm not really this guy. I'm just wearing a mask for these people. And then because of that, you feel disassociated from yourself.
Just putting on a show because I can't be who I really need.
Yeah, exactly. I'm a dancing pony. I'm a dancing pony that everybody likes to look at because I have my little combat and they like to talk to me, so they feel as if they were a part of it. Hey, I would have joined the military, but I did this. Hey, I would have done this, but, you know,
pretty much combat experience because I played Call of Duty once.
Yeah, and people say those things and they want to be near you, but you don't feel like it's even you. So you answer some of their questions and you sit there like I said, like a dog and pony show. And, okay, Uncle So-and-so, yeah, I shot some people. It happens.
And then when you actually tell them, they're like, this guy's crazy.
Most people don't really want to know. They want to know what they think they want to know, but they don't actually – nobody – one of the things I tell a lot of people is you don't ever tell anybody what you did over there except other combat vets, because the people who know already know, and the people who don't know never will understand. They'll never understand why you had to pull the trigger on someone who was underage. They'll never understand it. They'll say they understand it, but they don't get it. They don't get that he was a threat to your brothers. That little kid carrying that bomb would have killed your best friends, your brothers. So you shot him. Suck it up, Buttercup. Shouldn't have had a gun in your hand. And it sounds cold-hearted, but you know, I always tell people this. I like every one of you, but I love me. And the only thing I love more than me is my brothers. Mm-hmm. And I can now add to that list my children, but there aren't many people above myself on that list. And there's the only people who are the people who I'm protecting. And so if you're old, young, 8 to 80, and you have a weapon and you're near my people, I'm going to kill you. Well, nobody understands that. And it's hard to understand because – but now the question I always ask mothers is, who would you kill to save your baby? And the answer is always, well, anybody. Well, yeah. Then why are you judging us for what we did over there? Because that's the exact – if a 12-year-old was going to kill your infant, what would you do? Would you stop him or not? Oh, you'd stop him? Well, that's what I did. I stopped him from killing my brothers. So whatever. Off that subject before we go too much farther down that road.
Yeah, starting to get the feelers again.
Yeah, exactly. So pseudo-hallucinations, eating disorders, paranoia, difficulty regulating emotions – inability to maintain stable relationships. That's pretty.
Oh my God.
That's pretty constant.
Yeah.
Dissociative symptoms, depression, anger, nightmares, difficulty feeling emotion, guilt. Man, there's so much guilt. And people always say, I don't have guilt. I didn't run away. No, a lot of it's survivor's guilt, knowing that so and so died and I didn't. Why did he die and I didn't? We were 4 feet apart. Why did his truck get blown up and not mine? Why did this happen? And that's guilt. It doesn't have to be. A lot of the shame and guilt isn't about what you did, it's often about what you didn't do.
Or whether that didn't happen to you.
Yeah, like you said, when you didn't go on that deployment and the guy died, that's guilt. And
you'd rather put yourself there and take their pain.
Oh, yeah. No, I'd rather have no legs, no arms, no eyes than any of my Marines have.
Yeah, be a
potato
and
have all my
dudes be good.
Exactly. And I think almost all of us universally would say that. And it makes you stay up at night because you think, what could I do to make it up to this kid for being dead? What can I do? I don't deserve to be alive. Any second, if you guys have ever seen that movie, Final Destination, that's how I feel I live my life a lot of times. Like I owe death a debt. I've lived through things that I shouldn't have lived through. So any second now, I'm going to be dead. Any second now, something's going to fall out of the sky and hit me. And a lot of times we have this worst case scenario feeling. Like every time your phone rings, you think, well, that's the doctor calling to tell me I have quadruple cancer in every part of my body and stage 7 because it doesn't even exist.
And
but
he's
it
like,
exists.
Oh, in five,
he's
four,
like,
three,
you know, there's only 4 stages of cancer, but you have the 7th stage because we've never even seen it before. And you're like, okay, well, that's what I thought. Like, yeah, you know what I'm saying? You have these horrifying. Yeah, it's you just believe that any second now you're going to be dead because you've earned it. You've by doing enough bad things. Oh, man, just to get on that subject real quick. A lot of guys don't feel that they can be forgiven by God. Whatever your religion is, whatever you believe in, a lot of guys think the things that we did over there are unforgivable. And that's another thing that really hurts a lot of guys who had a lot of religion beforehand is they don't want to get close to God again because they feel even he is ashamed of what they did. And that's something else you need to get them into, a pastor, a counselor, a priest, whatever religion you are, whatever – a shaman, I don't care, whatever they are, and have them actually talk that out.
And just to touch on that, I'm actually one of those guys. If you feel ashamed, start with yourself. Because personally, I don't need a church to talk to God. That's just my personal belief. Mm-hmm. If you don't agree with it, then stop listening for a second. But don't stop listening. Yeah. But for the dudes who do believe that there is something else out there, start with yourself. Just start talking. You know, if you believe he's out there or whatever you believe in is out there, start communicating with yourself. Build a relationship and then go from there.
In almost every religion, and this is my argument towards that, is in almost every religion, God is considered the father figure. And if you have kids, what would you not let them back into your life for? What would they have to have done?
Absolutely nothing.
And especially if they're sad about it and they're hurting, if your child came to your door and was hurting and crying and sad and pain, what would you hold over them? And I can't imagine anything. So again, I'm not a terribly religious person. I believe certain things, I don't believe others, but so I don't want to say a specific religion because it doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. But in almost every case, God is considered, whether it's, you know, the Muslim faith, whether it's the Christian faith, whether it's the Jewish faith, God is considered the Father. And as a father who has children, if my daughter or my son were at my door crying and they begged me to open the door, there's no door I wouldn't open. Mm-hmm. And so that's and again, I don't want to get down that road too far. But I want you to understand whether it is internally that you talk with your own God or whether it is through a priest, a priestess, a shaman, whatever.
Start
wherever
you're comfortable.
Yeah, start somewhere and get back to that, because there's not a lot of things that make you more comfortable than having a little bit of inner peace, at least in one spot. So moving down the list, we talked about sleep problems. We talked – oh, substance abuse. Well, we're going to get into that in a minute. Social phobia. We talked about not liking crowds. Difficulty maintaining a job. That's a big one. Because guys' tolerance for bullshit and non-safe environments, we tend to speak with a different way of speaking. We tend to act differently than most folks. Yeah. If I see something that could hurt somebody, I will physically remove it. And if the boss says, well, that still has to happen, it's very likely that he might get knocked out. Because to injure my people, to me, is the highest form of failure, I guess is the right word, is the highest form of lack of leadership or lack of caring or lack of humanity. And so to allow that to me is just unacceptable. So when you're working and your boss says you have to do this anyway and you punch him in your face, it's pretty likely you don't work there the next day. Or you just tell him, hey, you're an F-tard and I don't like you.
Yeah, I got lucky with my job. I worked for a union, mm-hmm. and I made a really good relationship with one of the managers there. And he happens to be ex-military. Mm-hmm. So if I have a problem, I'm like, hey, dude, this is ate up. I mean, this is about as squared away as a beach ball. And he's like, you know what? You're right. Or he'll tell me, hey, just quit being a sissy. Just do it. I'm like, yeah, it's not going to happen.
Well, we have a different level of confidence in ourselves, I'll say. Mm-hmm. And if I think I'm right, I will take it to the ground. I will
absolutely.
Take it absolutely to the ground. I'll take any punishment you want to give me. But if I think I'm right, I'm not willing to see anybody.
Facts.
Well, and I'm not willing to see anybody get hurt or die because mm-hmm. of my lack of. I have enough emotional trauma for people dying. I'm not willing to do it here in this side of the
nope.
planet. And that's one example. But even just tolerance of, if I think something you said was stupid, I'm going to say you're stupid. And you realize that right as soon as you say it, that you probably shouldn't have said it to your boss's boss's boss, but you did, and
then it wasn't good.
No, and so that's one of a thousand reasons why we have a hard time with a job. But when I first got home, I was doing life insurance. Do you think talking about death every single day might have made me less than happy?
Oh, dude,
yeah.
You could have done that for a career.
Yeah.
I mean, that's totally fitting.
Oh,
I'm
man.
Being super sarcastic.
No, it was really funny because I never even thought about it until I went to counseling and the shrink. I have a really good relationship with one of my shrinks, so bear with me when I say he called me an idiot. He's like, you're an idiot. How do you not know that? And I'm like, yeah, you're right. I am an idiot, because that was pretty much straight in my face. Like, I don't know how I didn't realize that was a dumb career move. So you know what I did second? I thought, oh, you know, this life insurance talking about death thing doesn't work very well. I'll deliver bread for a living. And so I started delivering bread. And he goes, hey, idiot, you're driving a truck and you think you see IEDs and then you wonder why you're cranky. And I'm like, wow, I'm an idiot. So for my next job, let's see what I'm going to do. Maybe I should just go headbutt the sidewalk for a while.
Well,
no, but it's
– jarhead, so.
Yeah, exactly. So it's one of those things though where you realize that certain jobs maybe aren't for you anymore.
Exactly. Find something that fits. Find something you wake up and you're like, you know what? I don't mind going to this job today. I'll be cool with it.
We talked about self-harm, self-mutilation. We didn't really hit on suicidal thoughts, but I want to tell you guys, there's so much help out there. Oh my God, there's so many people who want to help you. And the world is not better off without you. The world is not a better place without you. You are not broken.
Worse.
You are not. One of the things I try to tell all my Marines is, you're carrying a weight, and let's pretend it's a sandbag, okay? And it's a 50-pound sandbag of hate that you have in your heart. And you want to end it and you want it to go away, understand there's an energy in this world. And if you kill yourself, that goes somewhere. That pain has to go somewhere. who are you going to hand that sandbag off to? Whoever cares about you. That's who's going to take
exactly.
it. And it might be your kids. It might be your wife. It might be your parents. And one of the things about this sandbag is there's enough of it to go around. So if there's four people that love you, all four of them get a 50-pound sandbag. And if you can't take that as this tough, hardcore Marine or soldier, how do you think your 4-year-old daughter, your 10-year-old daughter, your 25-year-old wife is going to tolerate it? If you can't take it, that's why you need to get help, because you have to get that sandbag off your back, but you can't do it the cheating way. You can't do it the easy way out. It's so selfish to do that, because you're taking away what they love about you along with what they hate about you. They might hate 10% of you. They might hate the 10% that is a dick when bad things are happening.
That 90%?
Yeah. They still love you.
Right there.
Yeah. I mean, there's a reason that they love you. There's a reason that they still care. And instead of killing the 90%, how about you go to therapy and kill that 10%?
So, or make that 10%
smaller.
Add to the 90%.
So I want to talk just a little bit about co-occurring disorders. And what I mean by that is things that go along with PTSD that almost 80% of people who have PTSD are also diagnosed with at least one of these. So I'll go down the list and then I'll kind of bring it back and we'll talk about each one. Major depression. Obviously, a lot of us have that. I don't know what this word is, so bear with me. I'm going to say it. Maybe I'm not. Dysthymia. I don't have any idea what it is. I don't have that one, so I can't really speak to it. You would think that I'd be more prepared for this, but I'm just not. So I don't know what that one is. But if you have it, there's help. Bipolar disorders, that happens a lot with us. Anxiety disorders, that happens almost exclusively, like all the time. Adjustment disorders, again. Mm-hmm. And then the ones that I talk about a lot in our classes, because it is – every study that you read gives a higher number to this. So I'm going to say the 90% that I've heard, but it's probably 92, 94. Like every time we read – but it's substance abuse and alcoholism.
Oh, geez.
Almost every Marine, soldier, sailor, airman I know who was in harm's way either drinks too much, used to drink too much – does drugs to numb it up. We use all sorts of ways to tolerate the crap we don't want to do.
Just don't want to deal with it.
Hey, I got to get out in public. I'll roll one up real quick. Hey, I got to go with my wife to some event. I'll drink 3 or 4 scotches while I'm there. Hey, I got to, you know, go to a game with my kids. I better smoke up before I go because otherwise I'm going to be a jerk. And so they numb themselves out with this stuff. And then they try to suck it up and they try to pretend that they're normal. And they just use it as basically self-medicating. And one of the things I like to say about that is, and again, bear with me, I'm not a doctor, but neither are you. So if medication is needed, don't you think the guy who went to school for 12 years has a better shot of medicating you to the proper level than a guy that you met down at the Safeway that sold you the pot that you're smoking? And I say pot because I'm so fucking out of touch, but I'm just being smartass.
I don't even know what to call it anymore.
Yeah. The reefer. No, I'm just
the ganja.
No, but I mean, you know, all the cool terms from when I was a kid are out now. But point remains, you know, when you're smoking pot, when you're smoking marijuana, or you're drinking too much Jack Daniels, it has the same effect as the medications, only you're probably not using the right amount. You're probably using the wrong stuff. You're probably – hey, you know what works really good for major depressive disorder? Drink a depressant. Like, you know, even when you say it out loud, you realize how illogical and stupid that sounds. But we all do it. – 10 of us will get together and you know what we all do? We all get hammered and then we shoot each other with pellet guns because we're stupid. I mean, because we're stupid.
That's a real story.
Yeah, that's a true story.
That like, just happened.
Yeah, I got hit in the head with a fucking log that was on fire. It happened. This is a true story. We're at our buddy's house. We had a pellet gun fight and then someone threw a log that was on fire and hit me in the head. And why did that happen? Because a bunch of depressed guys got together and drank a bunch of Jack Daniels. Because that makes a lot of sense, right? And I love my friends, but we're all dumb together. We all have the same problems and we all do the same things to fix it. And it doesn't work. And so I'll come back to you because I don't want to just exclusively talk here. But on that list, major depression, I don't know what dysenthia is, but I'm just going to leave it there. Bipolar, anxiety, adjustment disorders, substance abuse, personality disorders, and alcoholism. I know one of them that we've talked about. How's your depression? Are you ever depressed?
Oh, no.
Is that
never.
Smart ass.
Oh, yeah.
No, but I mean I'm actually diagnosed. No, like, I'll say this now. I'm actually diagnosed with major depressive disorder. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if everybody – you know, I mean a lot of PTSD guys have a few of these in their chart, but I don't know which ones you have. I just know.
If I'm alone, this sounds so weird. If I'm alone for like too many days, because I live alone now, I get home and I'm like, this sucks. I really don't want to be here. And then I'll just like call somebody. And then just after I get the phone, I'm like, well, back to square one. It's just, yeah, there's no way to actually explain it, but it's just, you just feel alone the whole time. You feel like there's nobody else out there, like last man on earth.
What I like to tell people again is, and it doesn't mean you necessarily are alone. You could be in a crowd mm-hmm. and feel that
oh,
way.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Like it's not about the number of people around you. It's about the quality of the relationships around you because mm-hmm. if I'm at a Walmart, I'm alone because nobody else there knows what's going on in my head. Nobody else there is looking for weapons. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So it is that you're alone at your home sometimes, but it's that even if you go somewhere and it's not a combat buddy, it's not one of us, then you're still alone. I'm still alone a lot. I'm alone around people all the time. You know, and that sounds really strange, but I mean it's the way I feel. I'm alone in a crowd. Drinking, drugs.
Never do the drugs.
Okay.
Do the drinking.
And does it work at all?
Yeah, until you sober up. And you're just like, well, here we are again.
And most of my friends who do that, the only time they feel normal is when they're drinking. Mm-hmm. And they do it enough that they get numb to it, so they drink more. And so they do that for a while, and then they find a new tolerance level, and then so they drink more. And they get to a point where they're drinking enough that should kill an elephant, mm-hmm. and their body obviously is paying the repercussions for what their mind doesn't want to. And eventually you'll die from it. I mean, it's that simple, and we can go over all the medical reasons why it's probably not healthy, but you know, it's something that it needs professional help because it'll ruin pieces and parts of you that you sort of need to function. In my non-medical terms there. But I mean, there's pieces and parts that will kill that are kind of important. Let's just go with the liver for one. You know, like it's a fairly important piece of gear. Can't really replace it very easily. Again, not a doctor.
Not at all.
But I'm just saying.
Yeah, it will actually age you. It will tear you up. Being a hypocrite, I still, you know, tamper with the black magic, I should say. But it's not like a daily occurrence.
No, and it's not a problem to have a beer, bro.
No.
Like that's one of the things that I try to tell people is it's not a problem to have the boys over and have a beer. It's a problem when you're alone at home and the only way you can go to sleep that night is to pass yourself out. And mm-hmm. I know dozens and dozens and dozens of guys who every night the only way they can go to sleep is a bottle of Jack Daniels, because the only way that they can not have those dreams, the only way that they can not go to combat tonight is to numb it up and kill it.
And black out.
And then they wake up and they're still tired because they never got any REM sleep because you were passed out. And you don't go into REM sleep when you're passed out, which, again, not a doctor. I just know that because I've talked to enough of them. And it becomes a cycle because now you're more tired. But you don't want to go to sleep because you're going to have a nightmare. You're going to see somebody die.
And you're thirsty and tired. Yeah.
So you feel even worse. And now you're tired and you're cranky and the next symptom takes on.
Yep.
And one of the fun things about this that again, it kind of – you'd almost have to have it on a paper in front of you. But I can take and make a circle out of these symptoms. And each one plays on the next and it becomes a spiral downward to where at some point you're living alone in a cabin up in the hills and you don't have any friends or family left because all you've done is piss everybody off. And I don't mean to be dramatic, man. I don't want to talk –
No, it's not dramatic at all.
I know you know that. I meant for the family members out there listening though – I want them to understand that this isn't me like being a drama queen and saying the worst possible scenario. This is the real life. If I didn't have a wife who cared, I would live in the hills right now. And I mean that mm-hmm. 100%. Like I would live on my own property that I own out in the middle of nowhere, and I would have a rifle and I would eat deer that I killed and I would drink water and I would never go see human beings again because I do not like most people, and I know 1,000 vets who would do the same thing.
That's like when when we take our trip.
Yeah, when we go out to the desert.
It's weird. I have no symptoms of anything. Yeah. I'm the most comfortable I've
because
ever
we're
been.
Around all of us. So me and Wes have a funny story. I'm gonna tell it. I'm gonna start it. So the boys were shooting in a little canyon, right? And we walked behind it, not knowing that they were going to start firing. And so don't get me wrong, we were totally safe. We were in a totally safe zone. They couldn't have hit us if they wanted to, but the rounds were going over our heads. And there's a certain noise when something goes over you that you – if you know it, you know it, and if you don't, you don't, and that's all there is to it. Can't be explained. But let's just say for a minute we were all both smiling because we were home. We were back in the combat zone.
I was like, get down, contact, contact. Yeah.
Contact West!
And he goes, oh my God, a firefight.
And we're both smiling ear to ear because, holy shit, we're back where we belong. And then you realize, no, we're in Arizona, or we're in Nevada.
Oh. And then we're like, okay, maybe we should get out of here.
I guess let's go get a rabbit. It's obviously, we can't shoot those people. They're our friends. And some of them are better shots than us. We better not go shoot them. No, but for 1 second, it was real again. And for those of you who don't understand the draw of combat, it's worse than heroin, man. It's because the adrenaline rush you get and the friends that you're with, and it's all good. The only bad thing is losing your friends.
The only bad thing is when you lose.
Yeah, but –
because there's no response.
But there's this kick of it that it's really hard to explain. There's still – some of the dreams are still about going back. Some of the dreams are still about if a bus pulled up in front of my house right now and said, hey, load up. We're going. We would both grab a gun out of my gun safe and we would both get in that truck right now. I guarantee
I would go grab mine.
Well, I'm just saying.
Really nice ones.
I'm just saying. If you had 10 minutes right now, they're like, what you're wearing, get in the truck and let's go.
Well,
I'm out right now. I'll stop this.
Yeah. Cargo short pants.
Yeah.
I'll be good.
Combat boots. Why? Because we're ready for it at all times.
And they're really comfortable.
All right. But moral of the story, that's all the symptoms that I can think of right now. That's all the nonsense that I can talk about right now. I just wanted you guys to know you're not alone. I wanted you guys to know that we all have the same symptoms. And I want you to listen to all of the 12 of the symptom-related podcasts that are going to come out with this. And I want you guys to understand that there are people who care. There are people who are willing to share with you, and I want you to be willing to share with them because there's something about communalizing this grief, communalizing it in a safe group environment, not just with random people. You can't just go tell Uncle So-and-so about your combat. But if you actually find a good group of guys, whether it's Vietnam vets, whether it's Korean War vets, even if it's a World War II vet, you have more in common with them than you have in common with anybody else in your life because they've seen it too. They've had their eyes on death, and they're the only people that you can talk to and you can express this grief and this guilt and this shame and these symptoms with, and they can tell you what they've done for 40 years to help. And they can help you find 10% better lives, and 10% better is 10% better than you had today. But yeah, I mean they're the ones who will understand you as well as you understand yourself, and they'll be able to tell you what they've done in their lives, how their wives have dealt with it, how they can help you learn to deal with things. And even some Iraq vets and even some Afghanistan vets have dealt with it for a year longer than you, 2 years longer than you. But either way, you can talk to them and you can communalize your grief together. And there's something about sharing that burden and letting somebody else in this world know your deepest, darkest moment that helps. So that is all I'm going to say for today, boys and girls. I want you guys to know I appreciate you listening. I appreciate the fact that Wes came in. Wes, thank you very much for sharing everything you did.
No problem. Airborne.
Damn Army people. They think they're so cool. They're like Marines except weak. So.
Aren't you guys in the Navy?
Yeah, we're the men's department of the Navy. All right, boys and girls. Again, this has been Post Combat Normal, and I am your host, Joe Morgan. Again, thanks a lot to Wes for coming in. See you next time.